speak clearly for me.
Sure. We could spend the next hour and a half listing Dale Richards' many accomplishments, activities, and awards and honors for five nights a week for a 25-year run from 1940 to 1965. The Dale Richards Orchestra headlined at the panorama roof of the Hotel Vancouver, as well as broadcast weekly on the CBC. After that, he went to BCIT and earned his Diploma of Technology in Hospitality Management. Thus ensued a career in the hotel business. Then, in the late 1980s, with big band swing music in vogue again, the Dale Richards Orchestra returned, and he hasn't looked back. The 14-piece big band performs at corporate events, conventions, as well as daily at the Pacific National Exhibition, which Dale has done now for 65 summers. He's busier than ever, and besides gigs all over town, he's the host of Dale's Place, a program that he hosts on 600 a.m., and that's on Saturday nights at 6. Maestro Richards is a member of the BC Entertainment Hall of Fame, a recipient of the City of Vancouver's Civic Merit Award. As well, he's received the Variety Club's Heart Award. In 1995, a grateful country honored him with an appointment to the Order of Canada, and last year he became a member of the Order of British Columbia. Add to that countless other awards, including two honorary doctorates from BCIT and the Open Learning Agency. He's a Vancouver legend. It's my pleasure to welcome to the commentary.ca Canada's King of Swing, Dale Richards. Good afternoon, Dr. Richards.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Is there anything that you haven't done?
Well, I haven't finished my career.
That's
I hope.
Good. That's good, yeah.
At least those are my plans.
Now, you have no plans at all to retire, do you?
No. It doesn't cross my mind particularly because every day is so filled with activities of one sort or another, mostly musical, or relating to my broadcast, or relating to my profession in general. There's no time to consider retirement, and I don't really have an interest in it because I'm following my passion and I'm enjoying life too much.
You're 86 years old, aren't you?
I beg your pardon?
You're 86 years old?
Yeah.
So the secret to keeping so young at heart, is that keeping busy and keeping yourself, you know, busy and learning?
Well, I think when you get older, if you are active, as I am, and have to be if I'm going to still be in the business, there are so many ongoing projects that don't involve only today. They involve the next few weeks or the next year or whatever it takes. For example, we've been invited to participate in the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games in 2010.
Really?
And also anticipate being part of the opening program of the new convention center that's now underway on Vancouver's waterfront. So these projects are all down the road, and I guess that's how I think, down the road.
I'm only 22, so I'm relatively young, so I don't remember the panorama roof. What was that like for Vancouverites of that era? Was that the place to be, or the cave and Izzy's?
It was peculiar to that era because places of that sort don't exist now. It was a dine and dance. It was a restaurant combined with the dance floor, and initially without liquor. It opened long before British Columbia had the liquor by the glass laws. And people would come for dinner, dancing, and a drink. And it was very fashionable. It was a large part of the social strata of Vancouver when you had an event of importance, a birthday, an anniversary, celebrating a wedding, or celebrating whatever. The panorama roof was a place to go. It was a high top, as we used to say. Well, I'll give you the litany just to indicate what was heard across the country on CBC broadcast. The announcer each Saturday night would say, "It's Saturday night, and the CBC is pleased to present the music of Dale Richards from the panorama roof high atop the Hotel Vancouver, overlooking the twinkling harbor lights of Canada's gateway to the Pacific, featuring the song stylings of Juliet or Lorraine McAllister," or we had a number of vocalists. And that's the way it was for 25 years, both on radio and at the roof, and of course during the war years, the roof would be filled with uniforms pretty well. Servicemen, service people, celebrating on a return home or a leave or another type of party. It might be sadder when they were leaving to go overseas. But the roof for a celebration was the place of choice in the city. And of course, we had a big band up there playing for dancing.
Now, where can one, besides the Peony, where can one go now to see you and your orchestra perform? Did you have regular gigs, or?
Well, regrettably, there's no place in Vancouver with that sort of program.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver's not alone. Other cities don't have that either, and I hear a lot of lamenting about it from people, but really nothing takes place to fill that need. I don't know how great the need is, but people do talk to me continually saying we wish there was a place like the Roof, and even in other cities I hear that same problem. Large cities too, like New York, there's only one or two places to go and dance and dine. It's not in favor generally. More clubs are operating on different bases now with entertainment as opposed to featuring entertainers, individual entertainers backed by an orchestra rather than dining and dancing.
Right. So I read somewhere that do you play at the Pan Pacific, or do you play at the?
No, not any longer. We did have a series down there called Friday Night Swing Dances.
Right.
But that was discontinued several months ago.
Do you play at the casino there in Richmond, or did I misread that?
That's not for dancing, but that's an interesting gig. That's something new in our agenda, mm-hmm. on our calendar. We've been out there now for, probably 6 months, performing on, but in the afternoon.
I see.
Sunday, Saturday and Friday, 2 to 4, with a combo, and we play in the Lulu Lounge, appropriately named for the island.
Mm-hmm.
But that is playing for people who are having a drink or having their lunch or whatever between getting lucky or unlucky at the
casino.
At the machines.
Right.
It's not a dance area, but it's a little entertainment offered out there as variation from the gambling.
Your theme is the hour of parting. How did that become your theme? Did all bands had themes, I suppose, right? Like the Dorsey Brothers had their own theme.
Yeah, in the big band era, that was it. And I knew I was going to go on the roof some few months before that, and knew that the CBC was carrying orchestras who played there. So I realized I had to have a theme, and of course, all the major bands had themes, and probably the best known of all would be Glenn Miller's Moonlight Serenade. Tommy Dorsey had Getting Sentimental Over You, and Benny Goodman had Let's Dance, and so forth. All the bands had theme songs. So I tried to think of something appropriate and something I liked to hear and something that would be lasting. It was easy to pick any standard song that was a quality song, but I thought, well, if I do that, they'll hear it elsewhere, and that won't make it particularly peculiar to my orchestra only. So I knew, I had known of an orchestra that broadcast in the 30s, years ago, from the Biltmore Bowl of the Los Angeles Hotel, and they used this hour of parting for a theme, and I'd always liked it because I'd never heard it anywhere else, and I enjoyed hearing it on his broadcast. And he had been killed in an automobile accident, and the song seemed at that time to have disappeared. I did have quite a bit of difficulty in finding the music, but when I did, I decided, well, that's the song for me. And I'm glad I chose it because it's an unusual melody, and it's a lasting melody. It's not easy just to whistle or sing on one hearing, but it's recognizable after one hearing because it's particularly distinctive. So it's quality of over 50 years. And it has. It has a unique, I discovered eventually that where it came from is written by a Michelle Spolensky who lived in Paris, and it was being played in Paris bistros as a tango. When an American songwriter went to Paris for a holiday, heard it, loved it, looked up the composer and said, I would like to write English lyrics to it. It was then entitled The Hour Bleu, The Blue Hour, and he got permission and wrote the English lyrics, took it back to America, had it published by the Berlin Publishing Company, and it came to be part of the American Songbook, so that's where it came from.
Every time I hear that on your show, you know, or I hear that elsewhere, and I don't really, that's true, I don't hear it anywhere else, but I hear it and I automatically think of you. Are there any other songs that you have to put in your program whenever you play? Like, are there songs that people expect you to play, like, in the mood, or...
Well, I have no direction from the station, I just play whatever I like. But the opening litany of the show sort of dictates to some degree, it's Welcome to Dal's Place, where we take a nostalgic look at the signs and times of the big bands, and the unforgettable music of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Well, that gives me a lot of latitude, because I can talk about the band leaders, or the vocalists, or the composers, and I do that frequently, tell stories about all those three categories, and there are lots of stories to tell, so no problem in carrying on. It's been running 5 years now in 600 AM.
We'll get back to Dal's Place in just a second, but I was in concert. Are there certain songs that your audience expects to hear? Like if you're playing at a tea dance or something, are there, like, In the Mood, is that a song that people request, or is that something you automatically include, or?
Well, that's a good choice, good for you to mention, because we usually anticipate the crowd and we start with that, In the Mood. When we're promoted as a big band, we call that the granddaddy of swing, that number, because it brought Glenn Miller to prominence, and he was a number one orchestra when he was a civilian band, briefly as he was. It was only 3 or 4 years. But we always start with In the Mood. There are lots of others, of course, that we play that should be in any dance book for a big band's repertoire. But that's the first, after our theme, that's our first tune of the evening.
And then what are some of the other songs? I mean, Stardust, do people ask for Stardust, or?
Stardust is a popular request. We have As Time Goes By, that's another standard. Embraceable You, lots of Gershwin. Lots of the classic composers like Gershwin and Berlin and Cole Porter.
What do you think that composers like Berlin, Cole Porter, the Gershwins, there's a common thread amongst them all, and it seems to be simplicity. As a musician, is that what you get, or is that just something I get as a layperson?
Yes, it's, for example, there's a difference, though. There's a vast difference between them, really, when you analyze it, but simplicity...
Compared to the music that we hear today, or like...
Oh, well, yes.
Burt Bacharach or something like that that came later.
Yeah, it's more direct. The melody lines are more flowing and more could be more anticipated, probably. If, you know, after hearing them once, you probably could reasonably repeat the melody.
Yeah.
And, but the lyrics were important in those days, too, particularly the storyline. The storyline was always interesting, and some of those lyricists had vivid imaginations, like Lorenz Hart and Cole Porter himself. He and Irving Berlin are the only two composers that wrote both the lyrics and the music. And Johnny Mercer, another wonderful lyricist, just brilliant man, and Frank Lesser, lots of them, brilliant lyricists. And the lyrics were an important part of the songs in those days.
Harry Warren is one that I am particularly fond of.
Are you?
Yeah. There Will Never Be Another You.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
An Affair to Remember, I think, is one of my favorites of all. The kind of people that go to your shows, are you gratified? Are you surprised that there are young people that are interested in music? Your kind of music, for example?
Yeah, I'm no longer surprised because, yes.
It's been a while now, hasn't it?
I initially was mildly surprised, you know, when a young person comes and talks to me and tells me they enjoyed the show, and I'm very gratified and glad to hear it, but that's great that the young people have an interest. That's wonderful. But it's not uncommon anymore. This happens frequently, and it even happens out at the casino. We play our normal, regular book of standards and so forth, and there are younger people there. When I say younger, I'm talking in their 20s and 30s. That's young to me. And I'm very pleased that they take an interest and know about what we're doing, and they care about listening to those songs.
It also must be quite rewarding to have people like Michael Bublé, for example, continuing to make this music viable and popular commercially.
Well, his is a remarkable career.
Didn't you discover him at the P&E?
He was in a talent, what they call a talent search contest, and I was one of the judges, and we selected him, and then I immediately asked him to sing with the band because we were playing out there and at that year in the Garden Building with a big band. So he subsequently appeared with us many times out there, and also at the Orpheum Theater. I had a concert, had the opportunity to present a concert with the VSO called Stars of the New Millennium, and it was featured Michael Bublé and Michael Kieshammer, who was a
piano player,
jazz,
right?
Jazz pianist, yeah. And he sang with us at the Panorama Roof. We're in the roof from time to time, by the way, because it's still used for private functions, so we do play there. So Michael sang with us there a few times. But what's remarkable about his advancement in his career is that you know, others have done it just as rapidly, like Buddy Holly or Elvis or somebody like, but they've done it on their own if not their own original material of the time. And Michael has done it on 70-year-old material. That's great that people are enjoying what he's singing because it's all standards from years ago.
When you were making it big in the 40s and 50s, when you were cross-country on the CBC, was there any thought of you leaving Vancouver to make it big elsewhere?
Yeah, I had ambitions of that sort. We did play a couple of gigs in Seattle, and then we played one in Portland that was kind of, I rather hoped was going to lead to other things. It was in what was called the Jansen Beach Ballroom, the Golden Canopy Ballroom. They used to have, the States was filled, well, Canada too, but especially the States, filled with these big ballrooms accommodating 3,000 people and so. So we had the opportunity of playing there a couple of weeks, and we're on CBS every night across the country on a remote broadcast for half an hour. And I got all sorts of inquiries from that, not all sorts, but some, a few. Particularly one that interested me was the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco about engagements. But at that time, to do that, to take the orchestra to San Francisco, would have meant doing only casual work for 6 months. Couldn't immediately accept the engagement. You had to be a resident for 6 months and member of the San Francisco Union, Musicians Union, for that long before you could take it. Well, it was totally impractical. So after investigating that a couple of times, and there was another time when we were playing in a Trianon ballroom in Seattle, and the same result came about, but it just was too impractical. I could go down as an individual and start over again, but I was never quite willing to do that.
You've worked with a lot of musicians and singers. You work with Michael Bublé. You also work with Juliet. People listening to us may not be familiar with Juliet. Was this something to do with a Kitsilano showboat or a boat show, or was this with the roof, or how did you get involved with her?
Well, that was was a unique situation. We had just started in the roof, and that was a very prestigious job. And I used to get a different type of phone call than I got when I was scuffling around the small ballrooms in the city. And one call came from a gentleman by the name of Ivan Akre, who was a very entrepreneurial manager of the Orpheum Theater for many years, in the, I think, even the 30s, 40s, 50s, maybe up to the 60s. And
was this Hugh Pickett's predecessor? Or?
No, Hugh Pickett was never manager of the theater.
Oh, okay.
Hugh Pickett was an impresario who booked performers into various theaters, various concert halls. Right. But Ivan is the manager of the theater, and he was reluctant to see live acts disappear from a stage. Vaudeville had long since disappeared, but he used to have a Friday night policy of featuring the local big bands around the city for a half an hour program between the movies. Mm-hmm. And he invited us to do that. We were having a rehearsal, and he said, "I notice you don't have a girl singer," as they were called in those days, Dal. And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, I heard a little girl at the Atlanta Showboat the other night." And I didn't indicate much interest in that. I didn't, you know, I didn't really want some kid singing in the band. But he asked me to hear her, just hear her, Dal. He says, "We'll go on from there." So I heard her, and she certainly could sing. So it was 1940. The date was June the 30th. It was a show, an evening show on a Friday night. And it was wartime, 1940, of course, and Juliet sang "There'll Always Be an England." Well, she sang it well, and the combination of a 13-year-old kid singing this song brought the house down.
Wow.
So I began to, that was her first professional appearance. I began to think about this, about her, and in spite of the fact that she was young, she could certainly sing. So a few months passed, she had her 14th birthday, and I approached her about singing with the band at the roof. And she was agreeable, but I had to talk to her family, of course, and it turned out I had to be her legal guardian before that could be arranged. But that was arranged, and Juliet became her singer for two or three years at the roof before she left for Toronto.
And then she had the big TV show, right?
Not immediately, but yes, when television arrived, she was unquestionably Canada's biggest star on television for a while.
Really? We talked about, you mentioned Dal's Place earlier. You said you've been doing it now for 5 years at 600 AM. How did the show come about? You were also at 1040, weren't you, before?
AM 1040 before that for an interlude of maybe two or three years. It began on CHQM. I was approached by Brian Scharf of that station, and he wasn't a program director, but he was a director of promotion and advertising, I think, at that time. And it came about there that they played that sort of music, of course, constantly all day. That was their featured
right.
type of listening. And so that's how Dal's Place started. It started, I didn't have that name initially. It used to be Memory Lane or something like that. But eventually changed to Dal's Place.
And so you do that once a week, do you?
Yes, and I have guests. It's on Saturday night at 6 p.m. here on the coast. And 9 p.m. on Sunday. And I always have a guest. Usually somebody is associated with show business. Somebody in a show, maybe, that's coming to town. This weekend, for example, meaning the holiday weekend, I have Christopher Gaze on, and we're talking about he now is the host of Tea and Trumpets, the program the Vancouver Symphony does on Thursday afternoons five times during the season. Matinee show, that name program. And then I also have Mel Howard, who is a very well-known New York producer and is bringing his Tango Passion to town to appear at the Film Theater for a week. I talked to him in New York, and he's produced many shows all over the world. He's traveled all over the world. He was a very interesting guest. I
I listen to it every week, and I must say that now that there's Jack Cullen's gone, you don't get that nostalgia. You don't get that talk about the city that was before. And I think that's why I appreciate listening to your program every week, because we do get that insight that you really can't find anywhere else. And I do recommend that people go listen to your show Saturdays and Sundays on 600 AM. You're 86 years old, Dale. A third of your life is past. So inevitably the question arises, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, I'm enjoying this longevity for a lot of, I'll tell you one reason. This is how I'll be remembered. People come to me now and tell me about how enjoyable they found the roof, for example. They enjoyed the music, they enjoyed the evening, they enjoyed the circumstances, and they have good memories of it. So I guess that would be my wish, that people I've brought good memories to people, and that's very gratifying to me.
As I said, I'm relatively young, so I wasn't around. But, you know, I used to listen to Jack Cullen every night and just love his stories about the old days.
I'm giving you good memories, you see, as young as you are.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, your station in particular I don't listen to the stuff that they have out today. You know, I don't listen to rap or rock or R&B, so I listen to, this is my kind of music, so, you know, it all works out in the end, I suppose. And then you get Rafe Mayer in the morning, so you can't do worse than that, right? Anyways,
Rafe makes a great guest on my show, by the way, because he's a collector of good jazz CDs.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I enjoy having him on my show.
Yeah. Dale, thanks so much for talking with us today. I appreciate you taking the time out to just reminisce, and I do appreciate it, and you know, hope many, many more years for you, hopefully.
Well, thank you, Joseph.
And thanks again for joining us. Dale's Place is on 600 AM, Saturday nights at 6, and it repeats Sunday at 9 PM. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plenna.